pitch the ball to Bell. That's upfield. 40, 45, 50, 45, 40. He's in the 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Cowboys. What a run.
Kicks it left wing, Lucas. Three-point jumper. Good. 6 seconds. No! Rebound! Cowboys win! Cowboys win! Oh, the Cowboys are going to the Final Four! Pistols firing! Touchdown, Oklahoma State!
Okay, Q, welcome back to the Pistol Cast. We got a lot to talk about today.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. It's Masters week. I'm still trying to get over last night's loss, but you know, life goes on. The sun came up this morning, and
were you playing in something last night? Or
I felt like I was. You know, I got to be honest, and I said last week on the Pistol Cast, I don't need to live in a world where Jim Calhoun has three titles, but my voice and the breaths that you hear on this podcast right now reveal that I do currently live in a world where he has three titles. So I was a little heartbroken last night. My love and my affinity for Butler has I don't think it's peaked per se. I mean, if they go to a third straight title game next year, obviously, you know, it's quite possible that my head might just fall off my body. But I was definitely all in with this team. I'm in love with the story that Brad Stevens has of, you know, working at a pharmaceutical company and saying that's not it, that's not what he wants to do, and going back and taking, you know, a mid-major to two straight title games. I kind of just bought into their whole deal. So,
well, the Calhoun
it was a tough
thing,
loss.
The Calhoun thing is funny. I mean, it's not funny. It's ironic that somebody who is already on probation for 2012 is receiving, you know, the national championship trophy last night.
I mean, it's ridiculous. It's absurd. It's frustrating. It's, I mean, there's so many words to describe it, but it's not right that he, I don't know. I don't understand how, I mean, it's kind of like the Tressel deal or the guys at Ohio State. They get to play in the Rose Bowl, but they, or whatever.
They actually played in the Sugar Bowl,
whatever bowl they were in. It wasn't a tournament like the NCAA, so I'm not into it, but.
Well, okay. No, go ahead.
But, you know, if you're penalized for something or you're going to be penalized for something, you should be penalized for it immediately. There shouldn't be any of this. You get to finish this and you'll be penalized later. I mean, that's absurd.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Well, speaking of college football, a lot of people on Twitter last night.
I'm not excited about where this conversation is going to go, but let's dive in.
Well, they were interestingly, you know, bringing up the fact, well, we wouldn't be having such a poor game if this was college football because you picked the two best teams and so on and so forth. And correct me if I'm wrong, but the Oregon-Auburn game wasn't like the game of the century or anything.
No, it was boring. I fell asleep on the couch. I mean, there was nothing exciting about it. And I would contend, and I've said this, you know, anytime that the college football playoff debate is brought up, I always go to this, but the Oregon-Auburn matchup, to me, wasn't that exciting. Like, didn't really have a vested interest in either of the teams. I'm not a huge fan of either, you know, of any of the players necessarily or any of the coaches. But had that been a championship game of a tournament, I would have been excited in the outcome. I would have wanted to watch the game. I just find myself most years not really caring about even watching the national title game in football because it's not part of a tournament. Thus, I feel it's not really a reflection of a champion.
Here's my theory on that is that you've got, and I brought this up a little bit last night with, kind of was going back and forth with, Royce from Daily Thunder, and the problem with football, and not to turn this into a football and basketball thing, but the problem with football is you have 6 weeks between your last game and the title game. And so there's so much downtime. You can't ride the wave of the story. So you've been riding the Butler story for the last
few weeks. Exactly.
Month. And right. if we had just picked Butler and UConn,
right,
you know, out of their conferences at the end of February and they played last night, you wouldn't care as much. I mean, you'd watch because it's the title game, but you wouldn't care.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, you're absolutely right. I don't, and there were people even on Twitter saying, I mean, I literally had to take a 24-hour hiatus from Twitter. I guess it hasn't been 24 hours because I retweeted something about Johnny Lawrence from Karate Kid being at Dancing with the Stars, but that's a whole nother story.
This is not a Dancing with the Stars podcast.
No, but that's about Karate Kid, so which is sports, obviously. But on Twitter last night, people were starting to say, you know, this wouldn't happen in college football because we'd have the two best teams. And I think you might have just said that like 2 minutes ago, but
I did.
But to me, like, I don't need people getting on Twitter or Facebook and complaining about how good or bad a game is, right? If you don't like it, then turn the TV off and don't watch, or turn to something else, or pop a movie in, or whatever you want to do. But I don't need you getting on there and just talking about how bad it is. It's annoying to me. And maybe I've done that before about other things, and I took offense to it because I've grown so much like affinity for Butler. And I would feel the same way if like OSU or Tulsa was in a game where people were ripping on it. But to me, like, no one's like forcing you to watch that game.
Yeah, and, but nobody's forcing you to get on Twitter and Facebook.
Well, you're right. And that's why I stopped, because I didn't want to see what they said.
Not to call you out on your own podcast.
No, but. I mean, you're right. 100%. But
I think the bigger point is, people are pointing out that college basketball is not a good product compared to college football, but also compared to the NBA.
And that's the part that was really bothering me. And I'm glad you said that, 'cause I kind of forgot, but to me, college basketball is one of the best products for a couple of reasons. It doesn't take 8 hours for the game to end. I mean, you sit there and a college basketball game is always hovering right around 2 hours. And with immediate timeouts every 4 minutes, the game just seems to break down into these little chunks where you look up and it's almost halftime. And then you look up and there's only 8 minutes left in the game. And it just, to me, that's what I love about it, is there's so many swings back and forth, and it's very quick. And it's, I don't know. Again, I've always loved college basketball, so it's hard for me not to get excited about it. But people that are saying that it's not a good product because it's a tournament and we didn't have the quote unquote two best teams left at the end, I don't know. I don't like that. I disagree with that argument. I think that it's more watchable because of the stories that go behind it. Like you said, the stories build for 3 or 4 weeks, and that's what makes it fun.
Well, I think it's funny that you get all these sports reporters and journalists and everything who talk up the tournament aspect and talk up the 3 weeks of tournament play, and then we have a bad title game, and it's like they completely swing the other way and prop up the BCS for what it is. And I'm not saying everybody did that, but the people that did, it's like, which one do you want? I mean, you know, right. you can't have – don't let the fact that we had a bad title game overshadow the fact that we had a great tournament. And I think, yeah, college basketball's product is not – probably what it was in the late 90s, early 2000s, because you have more and more guys leaving for the NBA.
Right.
I guess more so in the mid 90s, because in the 2000s, a ton of people were leaving. But the fact that it is a tournament, I think kind of covers that up so that we don't, if we had a BCS system in college basketball, I think we would care more that these players are leaving, because it would be more of an individualized sport.
Right.
But as it is, I think the team aspect kind of covers up the fact that these guys are leaving.
Right, I agree. I think you're right on.
I mean, we don't need to get into the 18% from Butler or anything like that. Do you?
Wow. I mean, can you? It's like I tried to explain it to somebody today who's not a huge basketball fan. It's like, rare do teams shoot below 40%, right?
Right.
I mean, it's you played really poorly if you shot below 40%. They shot 18%. I mean, I was talking to my sister about it. It's like they had two-point field goals like 30 minutes into the game.
Well, they shot 9% on 2-point field goals.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like
if you, like, you might as well just put Shelvin Mack at half court and just have him just launch half court shots all game, and you'd probably end up with a better outcome than you did.
Yeah. And you know, I don't think that was a byproduct of Butler's not a good team. I think they just shot really poorly last night. And I think they reached a point in the second half where UConn's defense was pretty tough. I mean, they're really long. It seemed like they had a bunch of birds out there playing, just, you know.
Birds? Like, yeah, ostriches?
Just, Yeah, I guess ostriches would be the best kind of bird to have long legs or long extremities, but
like a flamingo.
Yeah, something like that.
Is Jeremy Lamb a flamingo?
Maybe. I could see that. But
let me ask you this. Do you think do you buy into the fact that them playing in a football stadium had anything to do with that? Because really all three of the Final Four games, although they were, you know, the other two, the semifinals were entertaining, none of them were really high scoring, great games. Do you buy into the football stadium theory?
I don't know. I feel like I read an article a few years ago about the differences in the shooting percentages in domes. Maybe I should look for that, but and how different it is. But I don't really buy into that. I mean, those guys have taken so many shots in their lives that I think that they're used to adjusting, and they get a couple shoot arounds and practices beforehand. I think that I don't know if it's the dome, and maybe that plays a small role, but I don't really buy that so much as it's just the stage of what, you know, of what it all means. And, you know, let's be honest, UConn didn't shoot the lights out either. So sure, they won and they pulled away, but they didn't shoot the ball extremely well either.
No.
So, I think it's more about just the stage of it all. And I don't know. I'm just still baffled, still a little disappointed. I want to ask you a question about the tournament. And last night is, what did you think about One Shining Moment, and where do you think One Shining Moment is currently in 2011 versus where it was in the early 2000s and mid to late 90s?
Well, One Shining Moment recovered. Jennifer Hudson put it on a respirator last year. And it got off last night. It's back to being good. I mean, it's my favorite part of the tournament. It's everybody's favorite part of the tournament. If it's not,
go ahead.
Well, if it's not your favorite part of the tournament, you're a joke. I will say, compared to, you know, kind of one of my lasting memories actually of One Shining Moment is the 2000 Final Four, and I don't know why this stands out, but Mateen Cleaves had I think he was in like 57 seconds of the 3 minutes.
In what year? Excuse me.
2000.
I thought you said 2004. We might need to run the tape back on that one, but Mateen Cleaves was on his way to working at McDonald's by 2004. So,
wow. I might have said 2004. I can pretty much guarantee you Mateen Cleaves does not work at McDonald's, by the way.
Well, in other words, his basketball career didn't quite pan out the way he probably had hoped.
There were like 80 shots of him in One Shining Moment. And I think that the reason I remember that is because he was a star at Michigan State. He was a 4-year star, and you don't, you know, like we've talked about time and time again, you don't have that much anymore. So we've got guys in One Shining Moment that I'm like, I don't even know who this guy is. Like,
yeah.
And I was disappointed that they didn't have Jimmer going jaw face on Florida after he pulled up from like 35 feet.
Right.
I think that was kind of one of the defining moments of the tournament, and I thought it needed to be in there. But I mean,
One Shining Moment isn't my favorite part of the tournament, and it used to be. And I feel
In 2004, Mateen Cleaves was splitting time between the Cavaliers and Seattle Supersonics.
So, wow, that's impressive. Yeah.
So there you go.
Didn't realize that. Well, kudos to him. But it's no longer my favorite part of the tournament, and it used to be, and I wish it still were, but I just feel like it's lost a lot of its luster. I don't feel like they do as good of a job of showing all the big moments of the tournament. Kind of like you were just saying, I mean, they didn't, to me, really capture a lot of the things that I walk away remembering from this tournament. You know, Jimmer's shots against Florida being one of them. So to me, I just think CBS has kind of lost sight, or whoever puts that together has just lost the vision of what it needs to be. I don't know. At least they did realize that the Jennifer Hudson deal was nonsense. I mean, literally, if we did a timed viewing of that, which maybe we should, I bet she was 40% of the camera time on last year's.
Don't let this isn't revisionist history. 40% is like a minute and a half. I mean, it's not like the thing.
Dude, there were some long shots of Jay HUD. Let's be honest.
Jay HUD. Did she call you Q when y'all text?
I don't know. That was not good.
My last question about last night is what is Butler's legacy? What will we remember them for when we look back on this 2-year run in 20 years? Will we remember them as a mid-major? Will we remember them for Brad Stevens? Will we remember Gordon Hayward and Matt Howard? Or what will we remember them for?
I mean, personally, I'll remember him most for Brad Stevens, just his story. Maybe it's because I relate to it and I wish that I would do it, but I think that's what I would relate to most. And I, unfortunately, I don't think that this Butler story will be that well remembered by most casual fans. I mean, really? If you look at, think about even the George Mason story. I mean, that's, I guess, I think this was the 5-year anniversary of that. And most common fans may have forgotten about that. I mean, you or I can't relate to that because we remember, but I don't know. I would just say 20 years from now, I mean, some of the casual fans won't really remember. I don't think it necessarily stands the test of time. I don't think that Butler, I mean, obviously it's not even the same to even talk about or talk about like Michigan or UNLV, these, you know, and Michigan wasn't a mid-major, but like, I don't know where I'm trying to go with that, but I just don't think that their story stands the test of time the way that I wish it would, if that makes sense. Now, had they won last night, I think it probably would have, because that's just obviously more lasting. You remember?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's like the winners. It's like Villanova in right. 85.
However, I will say this, and maybe this is where I'm wrong, and maybe this kind of goes in their favor of being remembered 20 years from now. And this was, I think, in the Fab Five documentary, one of them talked about how, you know, no one remembers who won the title game 7 years ago, but they remember the Fab Five, you know, and that's kind of true about the NCAA tournament at times. You don't necessarily always remember winners, right? I mean, I bet you could ask a lot of people, has Maryland ever won a national title? And a lot of people wouldn't know if they had or not. Right. But a lot of people will remember stories because of the tournament, or they'll remember where they were when they were watching a game and they saw a big shot. I mean, I remember being in Chicago and watching Pitsnoggle and West Virginia make a run. And I was in this random piano bar with some of my friends. I was of age, by the way. And
thanks for clarifying.
I just want to make sure for all those listeners out there. But so you remember stories like that, I guess, more in the tournament. But well, that's, do you have any more? Oh, go ahead.
Well, did you read, I don't know, did you happen to read the Dan Wetzel article?
No, I can't bring myself. That's part of the thing with the Butler deal, is I became so infatuated with them and grew so in love with them that they became like one of my own teams. And when one of my teams loses, like at the end of the season, like when OSU lost to Bedlam, or, you know, when the White Sox are eliminated.
They lost to Bedlam.
When OSU lost to OU in Bedlam, I can't bring myself to read about them or well, turn on SportsCenter. So no, I didn't read it.
You need to take a few days, take a few personal days,
mm-hmm.
go back, find the Dan Wetzel article and read it, okay. Because he talks, he's in the locker room and he talks about how Van Zant and Matt Howard and all these guys that are seniors are crying and just kind of beside themselves. And then he talks a little bit about how Stevens is like, well, I'm glad that this team was the team that lost like this, because I know that personally that these guys are big enough to handle something like this. And I think that you get, you know, I was thinking about it last night. It, for these guys, they're not defined by – these guys are never going to play in the NBA. I mean, Howard might, but, you know, not for an extended amount of time.
Mac will play in the NBA.
Mac will play in the NBA, but
right, I understand what you're saying.
They're not defined by the titles that they do or don't win, because basketball is not going to be their profession. It's not going to be their job. So to win a college title is kind of, it is not as important as just being there to me. For them, right. for them, like you said, for the story, for them to have gotten to the Final Four 2 years in a row, and to have experienced that with their best friends in the world that they get to play ball with every day 2 years in a row, to me is far more important than cutting down the nets.
Right, I agree. I think you're right on point with that. And yeah, I mean, it's a cool story, and I'll always carry it with me. And having heard that, I think that's a story I could actually go read about Butler right now, but I'm not trying to read any articles about Kemba. Although kudos to Kemba graduating in 3 years. I mean, that's a pretty cool story too.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, I like Kemba. I like, we obviously don't like Calhoun.
Right.
But I like Kemba, and I hope he does well in the NBA.
All right. I want to move on to what is now taking our sports focus for the next several days, basically for the next whole week, and talk about the Masters. You're fortunate enough to hold two badges in your possession right now, and you're now showing them to me through Skype. And
yeah, I'm actually literally holding them in my hands. I'm taking them out of the...
He's holding those up really close to the screen, and now I'm jealous because I had the good fortune of being taken by Pistols Guy and Mrs. Pistols along with Mrs. Q last spring to go to Augusta National and partake in the Masters revelry. And it's amazing. So anyway, I want to talk to you a little bit about that because you're getting ready to head down to Augusta. Just give me your thoughts as you sit a couple days from stepping back on the pine needles and, you know, having a cookie for a dollar and some sweet tea and a pimento cheese sandwich and following several of our Cowboys and Tiger and Phil. And just give me your thoughts.
Well, it's funny because every year in January, you know, we kind of try to figure out what to do with the badge. I mean, we don't figure out what to do with them. We're either going to go or we're going to sell them. I hope nobody at the Masters is listening to this because I think it's actually illegal to sell them. I'll take that chance though. And every year I'm like, well, you know, we should just sell them, keep the money. You know, it's a lot of time to get down there. It's a lot of money. I've been, you know, however many times. And then every year, you know, once March rolls around, I go. I mean, I don't think I'm ever not going to go.
Yeah, it's hard to fathom not going. I mean, I sit there and I tell my wife, I'm like, for him to not go would just be absurd. Like, you have that opportunity and so many people would like to go.
Yeah.
And why don't you go ahead and tell everybody the face value on Masters badges, because it's not what you would expect.
No, I'm actually, I'll hold that up again for you. I'll actually let you, it's on there. I'll let you read it through the computer there.
Face value for 4 days, Thursday through Sunday at the Masters is $200. So that's $50 a day. That's crazy. 50 so big
ones. You can't, actually can't ski in Colorado for that cheap.
Exactly. So yeah, I mean, it's incredible. Anyone who ever gets the chance to go, you've got to do it. I mean,
yeah,
it's,
and I would argue even if you, you know, go on a Monday practice round, put down, you can probably get a practice round badge for, I don't know, $200 if you can make it down there and just go take a camera.
Yeah, that's the beauty of the practice rounds is you get to take a camera on the course, which you don't get to during the Thursday through Sunday, the actual rounds. So,
right. How fast did you, obviously masters.com is releasing tickets for 2012. They're making a lottery to where if you win the lottery, then you have the opportunity to buy tickets.
And I don't know whether I thought the Masters would keep that a secret. I mean, Billy Payne, he's prestigious. He likes to keep things close to the vest. I was hoping maybe he would just release that to people who've actually been before. But you know, he made it public. There's a link on ESPN to it. Jim Nance broadcast it to the world last night. And I actually tweeted about how I don't need that. I mean, I need my chances to be as high as possible to get one of those, but, you can actually, apply for those at, master. There's no S. I don't know why, but you can apply for those at master.org. I'm kidding. I'm just trying to throw people off, but,
okay.
But yeah,
I see what you're doing there.
Yeah. That's tricky, sneaky. Just going into the week, what group are you looking forward to following when you get there?
Master.org. It's not a site, by the way. Well, obviously there are four OSU guys, Mahan, Fowler, Van Pelt, and, Peter Uihlein. Really, the group that I want to follow, I'm probably not going to. It's actually the Uihlein, Mickelson, Ogilvy group.
Okay.
I like Ogilvy a lot. I obviously like Phil. And I'm intrigued by what Uihlein is going to do. But I'm not going to follow that group because literally half of the gallery is going to be chasing Phil around the course. So I'm actually probably going to walk around and follow the Ricky Fowler group. He is with Rory McIlroy, and which is the hardest name in the world to say, and Jason Day from Australia.
Okay. Right.
I'm interested to see how he does in his first Masters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you kind of alluded to it with Phil, and it was the same thing with Tiger last year, of course, coming off of the sex addiction and the Mississippi sex clinic. Again, I just want to throw out that I have been to the Masters. Apparently I'm going to make this as much about I've gotten to go for some time in my life, but it was insane to see Tiger and the way people responded to Tiger. I mean, you'd be like 8 or 10 people deep and people my height standing at 5'5", 5'6". You can't see anything, but the fact that he's on the other side of those 8 or 10 people makes you want to stand at that hole. And it's kind of absurd because you're not actually even seeing him, but people are just like enamored with it, and it's crazy. So the best thing to do with Tiger is like try and find a hole, like one of the early holes, like 3 or something, and just plant yourself there so you can just see him walk by once and then forget about him until he comes to the hole you're sitting on, you know?
Yeah. I will say, if I wasn't such an OSU homer, I'd probably try and follow around the Nick Watney, Adam Scott. Who's the other guy they're playing with? Hold on. This is embarrassing.
I'm trying to find it. I'm looking at
Dustin Johnson.
Okay.
I think that's a fantastic group to follow around. And I think it's kind of a group that not a ton of people will know to follow, but you got two guys that are very capable of winning it, and a third in Adam Scott that I try to follow around.
Well, you're hoping that maybe he throws you some Burberry or something, you know, just grabs it from his golf bag and throws it to you. I'm pretty sure I just said golf bag, which I'm not sure what country that is of, but you know, it's interesting. We've got 4 Cowboys playing in the tournament this year.
Right.
Why don't you go ahead and tell me just kind of your thoughts on that and who you think of the 4 Cowboys will finish the highest?
I think Uline is interesting because I think he's going to play well. I actually think he's going to make the cut.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's going to be in contention for the Silver Cup, which is the low amateur.
Okay.
I could see him finishing around 1 under, 2 under, something like that. I think he's really been, I don't know how many interviews you've seen, but I think he's really been poised and mature for somebody who's an amateur going into his first Masters. I mean, it's kind of been unbelievable to watch him handle everything.
Right.
Bo Van Pelt, I really think all 4 are going to make the cut. I think Van Pelt, he obviously had 8 top 10 finishes last year. He's been playing well so far this year. He finished 17th at the Accenture match play. I don't think he's going to win, but I think for him to make the cut would be kind of a victory in and of itself.
Right.
I think, first of all, I'll go to Fowler. I don't think he's going to win it. I think people's expectations of him are a little bit high right now, just because he's kind of a prominent figure on the golfing landscape, especially among the younger guys. You know, he's all into, he promotes a lot of stuff. He's on Twitter a lot. He's mm-hmm. very marketable. And I don't know that his game is necessarily caught up with that. I think he's fantastic. I think he'll win multiple majors, but I just don't see him winning this weekend. I think Mahan's the one that could win it. He finished 8th and 10th the last 2 years, actually could have won it in 2009 if not for a 75 in his second round.
Mm-hmm.
I think he finished at like 7 or 8 under, and Cabrera won it at 12 under.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's going to be in the top 5. I think he will be in one of the final 3 groups on Sunday. And if he putts well on Sunday, I think he could win it.
Okay. It's kind of cool just for the Oklahoma State fan who's not maybe necessarily a huge golf fan to have not just 4 golfers, but 2 who are kind of coming into their own and really kind of making a name for themselves, and Ricky Fowler and Hunter Mahan, and then also to have an amateur, because they always kind of pay a little bit of attention to the amateur. They'll kind of show some of his shots. They're interested in who ends up being the low amateur. So it's kind of cool for the casual golf fan who's a big time OSU fan to get really into golf this weekend. you know, as if a major is not enough reason, having all this OSU flair makes it even better.
Well, I mean, how awesome is, speaking of Peter Uihlein, how awesome is his life?
Well, that, I mean, this, I guess, goes into his life because he was wearing them. But the picture you posted today of the slideshow of the 10, I think it was 10 rookies, which, yeah, I don't know that he qualifies as a rookie since he's not a pro yet. But the outfit that he was sporting was phenomenal. I mean, that belt.
Not to delve into men's fashion too far.
No, but let's be honest. I mean, when you're watching golf, maybe it's just you and I, but I think you're naturally drawn to the players who dress well. I mean, I don't need to see, Craig Stadler out there just, you know, barely able to tuck in his shirt. I don't need to see Lee Westwood out there with, you know, 19 logos on his polo. You know, those aren't the things that I look for.
Well, okay. So, what about your boy Phil? He's not exactly the.
Yeah, he's got too many logos. That's the thing about Phil I don't always love.
Well, I don't know if that's the problem as much as his medium shirts and his pinstripe pants.
The pinstripes he was wearing today, because I may or may not have watched about 12 minutes of him just hitting shots on the driving range on Masters.com, which has finally come into the 21st century. The pinstripes are slick. I like them.
No, that is, are you serious with that?
I like them.
That's embarrassing.
They always say pinstripes are slimming, don't they? I think horizontal stripes are fattening, and pinstripes are.
We should call Coach Pierre and ask.
True. Yeah, let's go back to Pistol Cast number 5 or so. Okay, let's move on. Why don't you tell me your favorite thing about Augusta?
What do you mean, my favorite thing?
Well, I just want to know, what is it that you most look forward to every year when you go back to Augusta National?
Here's the thing. I've been trying to explain to people, you know, what Augusta's like, what going to the Masters is like, and they don't really understand. And, you know, I tell them that if you gave me the Super Bowl, the NBA Finals, the Olympics, and the World Series, I wouldn't go to all of those. I wouldn't trade all of those for the Masters. I'd still go to the Masters. Mm-hmm. And really my favorite part, and this is going to sound kind of weird, but my favorite part is going on Sunday morning, you know, as you can tell the story in a second, but yeah. Last year, you know, we get out there about 5:30, get our chairs set up. It's a circus. And then you get to kind of unwind. Everybody's just milling about discussing, you know, where their seats are for Sunday, you know, where they're going to be sitting. And then you get to walk the course on a Sunday morning. It's as quiet as it is all week. You get to kind of just – I like to go down to Amen Corner and eat breakfast and just kind of sit there by myself and think and watch people mow the greens and blow the fairways and go down to the par 3 course. It's serene. It's, you know, it's literally the most beautiful place I've ever been. And I think people – I think that gets lost on TV. It looks beautiful, but it's like times 100 in person.
Yeah, it really is insane in person. TV just doesn't even do it justice. And it's insane how much once you've been there once, you want to go again.
Why don't you tell the
last year you stand in line, and there's kind of like 3 or 4 different points.
We're trying to get our chairs like on the front row.
Right. You've got chairs, little camping chairs, and you put them down and they've got your name on them and you put them wherever you put them. And it's just kind of an honor code. No one's going to sit in your chair. So our goal was to get on 16 just left of the water. So we're just across the 16 green, just across the water. And we wanted to be on the front row. You know, we'd have our chairs there. We'd go walk around most of the day. And then for the last, you know, 8, 9, 10 groups, we'd sit there and watch them, you know, play out the end of the tournament. So we're standing in line and we come to realize that there's probably 12 to 14 kids, youthful kids, high schoolers, probably maybe early college. None of whom are wearing anything that resembles most of the other people in line. And not that you've got to be rich, because we certainly are not that. We're just lucky to have gotten to go last year, and you're lucky to get to go again. But most of the people that are there are wearing some kind of golfy type clothes, right? They've got on like khaki shorts or khaki pants and kind of a dress shirt or a polo shirt or a pullover or a hat or something. These guys had on, some of them had jean shorts. Some of them had, you know, shoes that I would wear to mow in. Some of them had on I think one kid had a cutoff t-shirt on. And you just got the feel that these guys weren't coming to watch the Masters on the final round. And so we started to listen to them, and you realize that they've been paid in cash by badge holders to go in with their badges and get their seats down and then go back out and give the badges to the other people to go back
in.
Which
is a pretty dicey, you know.
Yeah, you're definitely rolling the dice if you're the badge holder to let – some of these characters go in there, because I wouldn't put it past them to climb a tree, you know, pull a Happy Gilmore and grab one of the, you know, the stick on 15 and do the horse around the green. I wouldn't put those kinds of things past them. So you're nervous that they're going to do that at some point. Those people are going to, you know, get their due. But so they go in, or so as we're in line, right? And Pistols guy's trying to explain this to me as we go, that this is going to be crazy. Well, they let you in the gate, but then they only let you go about 20 feet and they stop you at another point. And why they do this, I don't understand. It's ridiculous. There should be one stopping point and then they let you go. But they literally take you to like three or four different points along the way, and you stop at each of these points. One of them is when you go through security. But so you literally like... with each point, like the intensity and the amount of crammingness together that people are gets more and more. And so it's stressful and it's high intensity. And you're seeing these kids who are paid literally, I heard some of them say like $200 to go put this chair down. And it's just crazy because you're like, you're ticked because you don't want these jack rods to get a better seat than you. But you also are going to have some decorum about yourself. You're going to walk because that's what Augusta National tells you to do. And meanwhile, these guys are getting off the sidewalk. They're cutting in and out of shrubbery and pine straw and all these kinds of things. And finally, you know, without going too far into detail, we ended up on the second row. I'm pretty sure Pistols guy wanted to just boot me from the final round altogether, and just force me to just head on back to Oklahoma. The worst part about it is we sat there in that second row, you know, in the last few groups, and we enjoyed it. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's definitely, you know, not something to hang your head about, being on the second row of the 16th hole at the Masters. But we looked over to our left, and on the front row, you know, right there, probably, you know, 35 feet from the hole, from the pin, and, you know, just a from spitting distance from Vern Lundquist in the 16th hole. And you've got this 15-year-old girl who has no clue what she's doing. She's probably having withdrawals because she doesn't have her phone and she can't text her boyfriend. And you've got her mom, who probably doesn't understand what golf is, or, you know, she probably doesn't know who Phil Mickelson is. I don't know where to go with the rest of the story, but the frustrating part is you looked over there and you knew those were the people, because we saw when the seats went down, those were some of the people that paid the 200 bills to get their seats down. So that was a really long story. I apologize.
No, it was awesome. I loved it. You actually almost got stampeded.
It's almost like running of the bulls, except, like I said, they're constantly telling you to walk, but most people are very courteous about it. And the only thing that really frustrated me about the whole situation was those kids who really – that should be outlawed or something. I mean, you know, I don't need runners going in to put seats down. That's just not right. So
yeah, I actually think, speaking of decorum, I think you cursed. I think aloud.
Yeah, I probably did, and I take that back, and I apologize for that. But
I think we need to send a letter to the Augusta National officials. Yeah. You know, we're sorry that we did this.
It's insane. You know, and another great Master story about that morning is Pistols guy may or may not have had to go to the bathroom worse than anybody I've ever seen in my life. And I kept telling him, dude, you've got to hold it, because I can't stand in this line by myself. He keeps trying to hold it. He finally decides, when we're finally to the last barrier, literally, he's like, dude, I think this is going to be the last one. I've got to go. He leaves me. And I for all I know, 10 seconds from now, while he's using the facility, they're gonna open the gates and I'm gonna be running with the bulls, and I have no idea what I'm doing. And he leaves me. It was insane. But another great story, real quick, is the chocolate chip cookies at Augusta National are phenomenal, and they're only $1 and they're huge. So it wasn't beyond me to down like four or five sweet teas, which also I think were a dollar, and four or five cookies per day that we were there. And the last day, Mrs. Q and I loved the chocolate chip cookies so much that when Pistols Guy and I went in, she said, you need to come out with some cookies. You need to just buy some and bring them. So before we went to sit down for the last time at 16, I bought like six cookies, right? And I'm walking around to our seats around the 16 green with six cookies, you know, and crawling over people to get to our seats holding the six cookies. And then we walk back to our car with six cookies. So needless to say, my wife and I made our master's memory last for about another six nights when we got back to Oklahoma. Those last two cookies were pretty hard by the time we got to them. So let's get back to the real stuff. Who are you picking to win? I mean, you said you think Hunter Mahan's a top five.
Yeah, athletes. I think.
Who are you picking to win? Give me your top three.
Oh, I'm struggling to recover from this. All these stories. I'm actually okay. I'll count it down. I'll actually go Mahan at three. I think that I really think he's going to play well. I think he's going to, like I said, be in one of the final two groups and just have a great weekend. I think Westwood, again, I've got him at number two. He can't seem to win that first major. Right. I think he's finished second or third in every major now. So that's where I've got him again. And my pick for this week is actually Matt Kuchar. I think he's been playing really well the last year. He's the number 10 overall in the world right now. And he's played Augusta a lot. He played there, I know, as an amateur back in, I believe it was 2001, when he was at Georgia Tech.
Right.
And I remember my parents kind of being in love with him and just the way he played. And he's had some success there. I think he's finished in the top 20 before. But I think he's going to do well. I think he's going to win. So nice. Do you have a top three or?
I'm going to go with Phil. He's going back to back.
Wow.
Yeah. I just throw that out there quickly. I think Ricky Fowler is going to finish third, kind of similar to what Anthony Kim did last year. I'm not sure if Kim finished third, but he was right there in the top five.
Yeah.
So Ricky Fowler's at third. I'm giving these in first, third, second order. And then, in second place, I'm going to go with, Zach Johnson. I think that he's familiar with the course. If you look at the invitees, if you look by the reasons that they were invited, if that makes sense, on masters.com, it shows the reasons they're invited, one being that they're a Masters champion and they get to come for life, and 15 is they won some tournament, and 16, whatever. Zach Johnson has about eight reasons that he gets to be at the Masters this year. So he's very deserving, obviously. so I'm taking Zach Johnson at number two.
Anthony Kim did finish third last year with a final round 65.
Thanks. So, I'm pretty sure he birdied 16 right in front of us in the last round.
Yeah, you know, I wish he hadn't gone to OU because I
you would like to like him more.
And he's a Nike guy, and it's not good.
Why don't you give me, you know, one or two Masters memories before we sign off, and then just anything else you want to tell us about the Masters?
Two things. First of all, the year I went with a bunch of college buddies, I believe it was whatever year Immelman won, maybe 2008. It was 2009. We got to the merchandise tent, and people in our group, there were five of us, and we had to literally on our cell phones log into our bank accounts and move funds around to afford all the Masters gear that we bought that year. And I mean, you can speak to that because you get in there and it's almost like you lose track of any, you know, budget you might have thought you had, because
right.
you don't know when you're going to be back and you don't know if you'll be back, and it's out of control.
Yeah, it's easy to become irrational in that moment for sure. Yeah.
My other memory is from the first year I went with my dad. It was when Zach Johnson won. It was like 40 degrees on the weekend, so it was not the ideal first tripes across the country to Augusta. But on Sunday, whenever we were putting our chairs down, like you and I did, he we were coming down the hill on number six, because a lot of people don't know, but six kind of is kind of backs up to number 16. And so six is a par three. You got to walk down the hill and then back up to the green, but you can also kind of veer off towards 16. So we're coming down the hill on six, veering off towards 16. Well, I get all the way down the hill and I turn around and he's nowhere to be found. So I'm like you, I'm like, well, he's just left me. I don't know what to do with my chair. People are running. They're not supposed to be. People are yelling and, you know, marshals are tasing. I mean, there's no tasing, but everything's just kind of chaos. And I was frantic because I didn't know what to do. Well, it turns out he had one of those jackets on with the drawstring with the pull cord at the bottom to tighten it. He had hooked that on one of the stakes holding the ropes in place, and he had drawn it out like 30 feet as he was walking, and it started pulling on him, and he thought somebody was like tugging on his jacket, so he starts like swiping behind him and trying to get this person off. He thought somebody was attacking him. I guess I don't know what he thought. And so he couldn't get it unhooked, and people were flying past him, and finally he just basically snapped it with his hand and broke his jacket. His jacket unravels and he comes tumbling down the hill, and it was a disaster. I think we ended up on like the fifth row. There wasn't a lot to see because I think Zach Johnson won a little bit going away. But it was kind of a funny story.
That's a phenomenal story. I've heard it before, and every time I hear it, it makes me laugh out loud. I mean, it's just really good stuff.
Well, and if you know my dad, it's even funnier.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, just classic. Just classic.
I've got, okay, one more, you know, we could talk master stories forever, but one more story to, I guess, kind of end the podcast. I believe it was last year. It might have been me and you were in there, or me and Mrs. Pistols. I'm not sure. Like I said, that there's areas that are kind of roped off, staked and roped off that you can sit in, and you know, they have like one or two entrances into that area. You kind of take your chair in there, set it up. It's, you know, it's pretty conventional. Well, these two jackrods, to borrow one of your terms, try to, yes, go under the ropes with their chairs and basically crawl into this section to set their chairs up. Well, it's not, right, you know, nobody's rushing down there. They're just putting their chairs in. It's not a big deal. The marshal comes flying. I mean, these marshals aren't like spry young men. They're elderly. And
right,
this marshal comes flying around the corner and basically grabs this guy and says, "Do you understand where you're at? Like, do you know where it's almost like, you know, we said that sarcastically to each other. Like, he was legitimately asking the guy if he was aware of what state and city and golf course he was in. And the guy kind of gave him a blank stare, and he was like, "This is Augusta National. We don't climb under the ropes here. The rope is there for a reason. You can get your chair and come out and go back around and enter through the entrance.
Right.
I don't know where you think this is, but this is Augusta National."
Right.
Which was, yeah, just
that's the beauty of it, because in most places it'd be like, "Well, he got through, he broke the rules, and just like next time don't do it, slap on the wrist." But they're like, "No, you literally pick up your chair, bring your person outside the rope and go back around, at which point those seats will already be gone, you know,
bring your person."
I mean, that is just good stuff. So yeah, it's phenomenal.
Okay, Q. Well, great podcast. Appreciate you coming on. We'll do it again next week. We'll wrap up the Masters, talk a little OSU baseball, and see what else we got going on. Maybe talk about the spring game. Spring game next weekend.
Yep, just coming up. We're getting excited about football, and I love hearing Brandon Wheaton in interviews. So maybe that's something we can talk about a little bit. I don't know how you feel about it, but he just cracks me up.
Okay, Q, we will talk to you later. Enjoy your Masters viewing this weekend, and we'll see you next week.
Sounds good.
See ya.